And I'm now joined on the line by John Mark McCafferty, CEO of Threshold, to talk about the return of bedside accommodation having an adverse effect on the homeless crisis in Ireland. A very good morning to you, John Mark. Thanks for joining us. I hope you're keeping well.
Good morning to you, Johnny.
Good morning to you. You're very welcome. Well, it's very worrying that almost a decade after the introduction of legislation to eliminate the bedside, we are now hearing calls for its reintroduction in response to the present shortage of accommodation. And recently, the Housing Minister, we believe, Owen Murphy, intimated that he would consider bedsides as part of a review of the Rebuilding Ireland programme. What's the opinion of Threshold, John Mark, in response to the sudden U-turn in government policy?
Well, I mean, we are a housing charity. We serve people across the country, providing advice and preventing homelessness through our telephone and face-to-face services in Dublin, Cork and Galway. And it's something that we campaign for very stringently, the outlawing of bedside accommodation. And we were successful because it was outlawed, and for very good reason. Many of the bedsits were substandard. They were structurally unsound. Many were non-compliant with fire safety. And I know that the new minister, Owen Murphy, has been quite exercised about fire safety. In fact, he launched a report, a review, just a number of days ago. But some of the accommodation that he's saying may be back on the table or might not be ruled out, many of them are the very units, they're the very houses or apartments which are not compliant or weren't compliant with fire safety when they were taken out of the market. And it also doesn't do justice to the 90% of household of landlords that became compliant that said, okay, the legislation is coming down the track, so we're going to upgrade the accommodation in order to make it much more livable, much more habitable, much more safe. And to give people bathrooms and cooking facilities in their own homes. Because remember, bedsits mean that maybe your cooking facilities are outside of the home, they're shared. Certainly your bathroom is probably shared. And really from a quality of life perspective, are we expecting people, children, older people, anyone to, have to leave their home if they're feeling sick, if they have to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, that they have to leave their home to some kind of shared arrangement. That is not something which is appropriate for the 21st century. And it will not be a solution in addressing the housing and homelessness crisis. Indeed, what it risks doing is lowering standards, lowering the bar in terms of what is acceptable in terms of accommodation for people, especially lower income and more vulnerable people. And many of the people that we are serving, advising, would be, I guess, the people who might have to find themselves in bedside accommodation if it was to come back into the market.
Okay. The new regulations introduced to remove the substandard accommodation, I think it was back in 2009, if I'm correct in saying, and in the in the 5 years between 2006 and 2011, the number of bedsits fell by about 50%. Are there actually any bedsits left at all being used for accommodation today, like substandard ones? Roughly how many?
Our understanding is that there's probably between 1,000 and 1,500 bedsits. Now, whether they're being used, they're not supposed to be used. If they're being used, then they're being used illegally. So there's no official figures to say that bedsits are being utilised. However, you just have to visit some of the property websites to see that things very, very close to bedsit dimensions, at least, are on the market, are being advertised. And they've been advertised at fairly hefty rents for people who have no other option. So our worry is that you bring on those units that either have been sitting or have been let illegally, and you find yourself, that's not a solution to the housing and homelessness crisis, because the numbers are so small. that it's not going to kind of create a whole new wave of units to the market for families and for individuals. And we also risk those issues of structurally unsound apartments, not, you know, fire traps. I'm reminded of an incident just some weeks ago, maybe a month or two ago, in Mountjoy Square, where there was an overcrowded set of apartments. Apparently, there was a very high number of people in just a very small number of rooms. And there was a fire. And luckily, everyone got out because of the quick reaction of the residents and the work of the fire services. That could have been a Grenfell, you know, a mini Grenfell disaster in Dublin. And we were lucky that it didn't happen. However, we may tempt fate with the introduction of bedsits. Also, the reality is, you know, landlords have upgraded accommodation, so and it's some time since that accommodation was upgraded. So really, you have to wonder, at a time when there's such demand for accommodation, why there would be empty units that hadn't been upgraded to include bathrooms, or, you know, small units that had been kind of renovated to make a slightly larger apartment, at a time of huge demand of rising rents. I mean, we have a fundamental question about, you know, the retention of these units. Were they used? Were they used in contravention with the law? So this argument that it's somehow budget accommodation and that it's somehow a solution just doesn't stand up. And it also goes against the momentum with regard to improved standards. Only in the first of this month, so just a couple of weeks ago, the Minister announced improved standards in rental accommodation. You know, so there are certain stipulations which improve the physical nature of housing, of apartments for renters. And any introduction or any kind of nod to an introduction on bedsits just undermines that momentum towards, you know, better homes, fire safety compliant homes, and homes with, you know, that avoid overcrowding, homes that have cooking and toilet facilities in the home itself. And indeed, when that was announced, when the improvements in the minimum standards were announced on the 1st of July, we reiterated our proposal for a system whereby landlords are obliged to provide evidence of compliance with minimum standards in order to rent their properties, as part of a kind of a wider system which proves that, you know, they're tax compliant, they have at least through the Residential Tenancies Board, and so that they can show that their houses and their apartments that they are letting to paying customers, to renters, to tenants, often tenants that are in receipt of some kind of government subsidy, whether that's rent supplement or housing assistance payment, which is all taxpayers' money. It's important that the taxpayer and the citizen get the value for money when they're purchasing a service from landlords, that it's a quality service from landlords. And if we were to move back towards bedsits, then the tenant isn't getting a quality home, and the taxpayer isn't getting value and quality for their money in the event that tenants are supported through rent supplement or the housing assistance payment. So we're looking for supply of accommodation in the rented sector, but we're also looking for quality accommodation, safe accommodation. We're looking for homes that people can live in for extended periods of time, because over one in five of us are in the private rented sector. An increasing number of us will stay a good deal of our lives, sometimes most or all of our lives, in the private rented sector. And indeed, there are significant increases in the number of families and young families that find themselves in the private rented sector.
Yes, yes.
So actually, what we need...
Yeah, sorry,
what
sorry.
We need is just, yeah. It's a high quality private rented sector.
Yeah, yeah. Just to recap on that, isn't it a very sad situation when at one time we actually had a very high percentage of homeowners compared to the rest of the world, even in the US, and now today it's a case where nearly 500,000 households are renting and paying way over the odds for it. We have kind of moved from being a rental, moved to being now a rental heavy country. And to get back to the fire situation in Dublin, I think that was in Mountjoy Square. Like, substandard accommodation is still an issue in the private renting sector. Like, according to the inspections carried out for a number of dwellings in 2015, two-thirds of them were found to be of substandard. So, as you mentioned earlier, the fire in Mountjoy Square could have been a Grenfell Tower tragedy, in a similar situation. Would I be right? Yeah.
Yes. And you're right, it was Mountjoy Square. And there are still units, you know, in the likes of the Dublin 1, Dublin 7 area, which feel the visits by, you know, Dublin City Council, other parts of the country where local authorities are doing inspections of rental property. Many of them feel that there's some great rental property, but there's also rental property that does fall foul of the physical standards, be that in terms of being structurally unsound, dampness, the fire safety issues that were well rehearsed over the last number of weeks because of that tragedy and because of the near tragedy in Mountjoy Square recently. I mean, do we really want to go back to, you know, seeing those front doors in the likes of Mountjoy Square with 16 bells on the doors, often very vulnerable people, in very cramped conditions? I mean, one of the big issues with poor quality accommodation is the effect on people's mental health and people's physical health. Often with accommodation that's damp, that's cold. If you look at a bed set, you're looking at a very small unit, and you're also looking at people having to, as I say, go to the bathroom in the middle of the night and leave their home, or even cook in shared communal settings. Now, you can argue that might be fine for student accommodation. It's not fine for young families. It is not good for older people who deserve more. They deserve more from our country. They deserve more from the housing market. And the challenge for us is to build high-quality homes for everyone in mixed communities.
Yeah, but not only that, I mean, the local authorities, they don't have the capacity to carry out inspections effectively. Therefore, landlords having to produce a certificate of compliance may just be the solution here. So tell us about Threshold's proposal for a kind of an NTC-type system whereby landlords will need to comply with minimum standards for renting their properties.
Sure, you make a very important point there, Johnny, in terms of inspections, that landlords generally, local authorities, you know, are, their resources are limited, and often something like inspections are way down the line when it comes to trying to house people. So some local authorities simply don't do inspections. It's very, very difficult often for people to find out anything about the inspection regime in local authorities, and even where those inspections do take place in the likes of Dublin City Council or South Dublin. The issue of enforcement is very, very difficult to realise, because a lot of the units and the landlords that fall foul of those inspections, very, very few of them are actually prosecuted. Very little action appears to be taken with consequences for the landlord, consequences for the units in question, for the houses, the apartments in question. So there's an issue there in terms of the capacity of local authorities, the resources of local authorities that they're struggling to place, and they're not able to place sufficient resources into both the inspection and the enforcement side of the physical standards. So that's why we have called for a self-certification system where landlords must comply, and they must show evidence that they have complied with the minimum standards. So it's a bit like a building energy rating, that they will have to, you know, acquire the rating or the standard, and then be able to document that and show that to authorities, whether it's the Residential Tenancies Board or the local authorities or both. that their unit, their house, their apartment meets those standards, because that is what renters deserve. Not just the high income renters that, you know, can access the higher quality accommodation, but for all tenants and for all renters in the private rented sector. And that would integrate then with things like tax compliance, especially, you know, relevant where landlords are receiving rent supplement or housing assistance payment, which are essentially our tax monies. And also their lease, their lease agreement, or their registration rather, through the Residential Tenancies Board, so that if you bundle them all together, and the burden of proof is then with the landlord rather than having local authorities run ragged or simply not providing the inspection and the enforcement that renters so badly need.
Okay. One chief economist at the ESRI did suggest that regulations on standards are a good thing, but they were unfortunately introduced at the wrong time, much too early, and he's implying that it contributed to the homeless. Would you agree with that? Now, not pointing fingers at anybody, who was to know, but what's your opinion on that?
Yes, the current housing crisis is of such a magnitude and scale that it's related to the big decisions that were made for over the last generation, and some of those big decisions were a deliberate lack of investment in social housing, and a deliberate lack of provision of social housing by local authorities, a lack of resources for approved housing bodies at certain times, especially the our leaner years. So essentially, what happened since the late 1980s was that successive governments across the political spectrum decided that they were no longer going to provide social housing to the same kind of proportion of the population that they had done up until then. That they would provide a small amount, but it would be low relative to a reliance on the private rented sector. So, effectively, successive governments since the 1980s said, we will let the market decide, we will let the market provide private rented accommodation, which is fine where your private rented accommodation is plentiful, is affordable, and is of a high quality, and where tenants have good security of tenure, long-term tenancy agreements, leases. That wasn't the situation. And in fact, there were almost no regulations until 2004. The regulations have increased in the last 6-9 months. But essentially, the perfect storm that families and individuals are experiencing, the families in hotels, is directly due to the fact that social housing has simply not been built anywhere near the levels that were required in the last 20 years. Coupled with a recovery, which saw, a rental sector 5 years ago, which was fairly affordable, becoming increasingly unaffordable for low to middle renters. And so, the idea that because we've improved our physical standards, that is a significant contribution to the current crisis. Threshold do not accept that. And Threshold see the solution to the crisis being massively increased social housing provision, coupled with ongoing improvements in the legislation with regard to the private rented sector, enhancements in regulation, which ensure that tenants do have stronger security of tenure, that they do have the access to the information and advice that they require, and that they know where to go, and that they know to approach services like Threshold, which can provide information, advice, guidance, that can provide mediation, interaction with landlords, and representation when it comes to cases going to the Residential Tenancies Board. So we're there to provide advice, we're there to protect tenancies, and we're there to ultimately prevent homelessness by supporting, informing tenants, by working with them to ensure that all efforts are made to assist them in holding on to tenancies. So provision of information is really important, provision of social housing is really important, and ongoing reform within the private rented sector, which provides a viable, sustainable sector for the landlord and the tenant. You know, we're not in any way anti-landlord. We want a sustainable sector. We want tenants to have, you know, good quality, affordable accommodation with long-term leases. And we need landlords to provide for those leases and for that accommodation in the private rented sector as part of a wider housing market, which includes home ownership and much increased levels of social housing supply, either through local authorities or through the approved housing bodies, the voluntary bodies.
Okay. Would you agree that building up instead of building out is the better way forward?
Generally speaking, I think we can increase our densities. I know culturally it's not something that is favoured by many, but a lot of civilised societies in across mainland Europe build up, and they don't necessarily have to build up you know, excessively high. You're not necessarily talking about 10 or 15 storeys. And if you look at densities in the likes of the Netherlands, Germany, there are sustainable densities which aren't necessarily high density. They're medium density, but they bring together, you know, apartment living, you know, duplex housing, and also they integrate services into those blocks, whether it's childcare, community services, retail, the ability for people to work and live in the same place, play spaces, green spaces.
Yes.
I think Ireland has a very long way to go when it comes to building truly sustainable communities, and sustainable communities aren't just physical, they're also to do with the social fabric and the community mix, but densities are also part of that, and where you have suburbs and communities that are spread out, you know, you just look at kind of West Dublin, South Dublin, it's very difficult to build public sustainable public transport. It's even a challenge to provide local, you know, retail services and other services that are sufficiently viable where you have a population which is overly spread out and diffuse. And I think if there are any lessons from the likes of Germany or the Netherlands or, you know, urban parts of Scandinavia, it is that you can design higher density neighbourhoods well, but it is possible. And we just need to be imaginative. There probably is a need for further conversation and a kind of cultural movement. But in order for cities and towns to be viable, we do have to increase our densities. I do believe that is the intention of the local authorities. And
okay.
I think in the long run, it makes better sense for people.
Okay, John, I'm really sorry. I actually had some more questions for you as well, but we've actually hit the button. We've run out of time here. So we have to call it a day. Maybe we can talk about it again, and we'll have you on again. John, Mark, thank you very much for joining us. It was a pleasure talking with you, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Okay, all the best. Thank you very much.